This insert is brought to you by Radio K Pulpit 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.
Good evening, listeners. Wonderful to have you with us again and this time. And once again, we have the privilege of continuing our discussion in this wonderful new year of 2022. Thank you very much for joining us.
Yes, and things are getting moving for this year. Hey, it's now the 18th today, and when the 18th, you know, the middle of the new year, things are really getting off slowly but surely. So, starter is the Afrikaans word. I always look for a good word for that in English as you go into this year. And may you just know that God is with you. When challenge start hitting us, we are not alone. And this is part of the reason why we continue to talk about addictions. And today we're going to continue to talk to André Leroux about substance addiction, a little bit more, the difference between process addiction and substance addiction. And André, welcome back onto the program.
Thank you. Yes. Good evening.
It's been wonderful to have you last time, and we're really looking forward to have you next time. It's a privilege to have you three episodes for this whole January. So listeners, if you if you missed the previous program, make sure that you get it on a podcast.
Yeah, www.kpulpit, click on podcasts, click on Into Me See, and look for the podcast that interests you, and listen and send it to a friend, and let's get the information and our hearts for people that are struggling. Let's get the word out.
Yes. So, André, can we kick off straight away with the difference between often people, when we talk about addiction, most people think about substance addiction, right? I just want us in the beginning of the year, as we have this little bird's eye view on addiction, to clarify the two different kinds.
Yes. So the best way probably to understand it is to look at seeing that certain behaviors are also mood altering and mood changing. If you think about how people do their technology, or you think about the person in front of the gambling table, that behavior for them, if they keep on doing it, is mood altering. We don't know the intricacies of what happens in the brain, but we've seen that the same level of brain changes and behavior changes are very similar to certain chemicals. So when we begin to see this, we see that the loss of control that people exhibit on chemicals are similar to the process addictions.
And that could include a whole range, right? Even shopping, porn addiction, a whole gamut of process addictions.
Yes. And those are much harder to treat than chemicals. Chemicals, to some extent, you can create a chemical-free zone or chemical-free home, at least. But when you're looking at these behaviors, you're having to find the sober point for that addict. In other words, it may be that you don't you cut up your credit cards. You may be that you block the internet. It may be that you spend less time at work. So it's far more intricate and difficult to define. And those people, to some level, have to work towards a normalizing and a boundaried existence, that the behaviors don't get back in and get out of control.
Very interesting. But we're going to have a whole program next week about this, listeners, to make sure, if you want to know more about these specific process addictions, to listen next time. Because today we're going to focus on substance addiction. And now we can get back to that one. Thank you.
André, when we are talking about substance addiction, what is the most common substance addiction have you found?
Yes. It's always been the traditional alcohol, and daily substances like nicotine's and a very good example. Sometimes the over-the-counter medication, but certainly what we have seen emerging, and it's been particularly bad in the Western Cape, has been addiction to methamphetamines, the classic tuck that everybody talks about. And that has been more prevalent in the younger ages. And the difficulty with treating younger ages is that according to regulations, you can't treat adolescents and young people with adults. So it has to be a facility or a person that is equipped to deal with the youngsters. And they're very vulnerable to going back to their same old friends and environment where it could be easily accessible and very cheap.
Yeah, that was bringing me to the next question. Why, I mean, if we put it in on a hierarchy, why are these the most common ones? I mean, what makes them so common?
I think that when one looks at the addictive potential, there are certain chemicals that develop addiction faster. So a stimulant would be an example, opiate would be another example. So you often find with treating the alcoholic that they've been drinking 30 years before they maybe seek help, versus if you're looking at the chemicals that have a very fast progression, it could be as little as less than a year or 18 months. So it develops the crisis much quicker. And the example is that with the illegal substances, people get into trouble quite quickly. While if you're looking at the alcoholic, they often get protected by their environment until the inevitable is going to happen.
But we're not only talking about alcohol and the tic, but what are some of the other addictions or substances that...
Medication, what you said.
Chemicals that people could get addicted to.
Stuff.
Yes. So one of the really addictive pharmaceutical over-the-counters would be the codeine-containing products, the headache tablets and the cough mixtures. Over-the-counter would also include certain of the antihistamines and sinus medication because those function as a stimulant. But you would even find that people become addicted to prescription medication. So examples there would be the tranquilizers, the sleeping tablets, the prescription painkillers. You know, so somebody prescribes it initially and the person just uses it for longer and more than what was necessary and intended.
So what happens there? Because it feels like it's almost a legitimate one that's maybe just drawn out a little bit too long. I remember many years ago while we were in China, I almost got addicted to a sleeping medication because it was prescribed in a certain way, but I don't need as much, you know. So it was prescribed, let's say, one tablet a night, but I figured that I couldn't wake up. So I took half and then I still struggled to wake up and then I took a quarter. And so in the beginning, I took it correctly. I just want to explain quickly. But over time, then, of course, I had a lot more of those tablets. So I so I tried not to use it regularly anymore. It was a very stressful situation that we were in. And then I started using it, maybe once a week or twice a week. And I realized that I started getting withdrawal, and that I was so shocked because I didn't think it could happen on such a low dosage. And when I went in on the internet, it said it was low dosage over long duration addiction. And I was literally on the verge of it. I had to go off it, and I had withdrawal for a long time. And I was so shocked that something like that could happen to me because I didn't think I abused it, but I probably did because I didn't use it the way that it was prescribed, right?
Yes. So the best way to understand that addictive process is that people develop a tolerance. So if you've never used something and you use it the first time, there would be some side effects and symptoms. But the more that your body adjusts to cope with that quantity, the less effect it has, which explains why people get more and more so that they can get back the effect. And it seems that people have the point where even when they see it, like the withdrawal signs you were mentioning, they can't cope with the withdrawal, so they continue to use and actually, you know, the tolerance develops to a point where it actually does become, you know, damaging in the sense of impact on a person's functioning.
Absolutely. We need to take a break quickly. We'll talk more after the break. Welcome back, listeners. And Andre, we were just talking about over-the-counter medications and how people, without wanting to go there, can get addicted to it in a very subtle way. So now I want to ask you, Andre, when people come to that realization that this is a problem, I explained previously what happened to me many years ago when we were in China. And I remember I told Frederick, because I know that in our family we are prone to addictions, and immediately made a plan to get rid of that medication. I told Frederick, and I suffered through the withdrawal for a long time. We didn't have other help at that time, but I just had to suffer through it. But yeah, what can you recommend in this country where there is help and for people if they're in that situation right now with over-the-counter or maybe prescribed medication that they that they realize they developed a dependency to?
Yeah. Well, I think what one needs to do is that you must admit that there's a problem. Because without admitting, there's going to be no openness or vulnerability to the help.
And then there's shame, hey? Because it's shameful to say I have a problem. I remember I felt so ashamed when I told Frederick, I think I'm addicted to this medication. And I wasn't addicted. I was on the verge of addiction. But, I mean, if I didn't admit it at that stage, it would have gone farther.
And the family also has to break through their denial, you know, because they've become accustomed to the excuses and the justifying and the rationalizing that, that the addict does. And that's why at the moment that somebody out of the secrecy zone starts reaching out for help, it's often the beginning of a recovery process, you know, and that's sometimes the role of just getting some outside perspective helps the inside parties to realize that there could be a problem.
So where could a person go for an outside perspective?
Yes, so there's lots of help available, and I think that's the advantage of us really becoming quite technology-focused is that there is a lot of help available. There's more and more the realization that people can get help and counseling online, so on the various networks. There are many psychologists, social workers, pastors, etc., that have needed to do their work over the internet.
And people that specialize in addiction, right? That's important.
Yes. Yeah. And the benefit of like the self-help industry, the Alcoholics Anonymous, the Sex Addicts Anonymous, is that you meet other people with the relatable story, and suddenly it actually takes on a different meaning because somebody gets me. It may be slightly a different addiction, but it's basically the same thing.
And it gets people out of isolation, right, which is crucial.
Yes.
Because we all think that we are the only one with that problem and don't realize, and that's the beauty, like you say. Maybe you want to comment on that.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, the moment there is admittance, it breaks the secrecy. And we are also involved in a program called Celebrate Recovery. And one of the known sayings, not only at Celebrate Recovery, but that we are as sick as our secrets. So as long as there is a secret, there is going to be dysfunction, and there's going to be heartache and breaking down of relationships, because secrecy is really the fertile soil for perpetuating sin and brokenness.
But you know what, Frederick, that brings me to something else. What do we do? And I think it's also important to talk about this at this on this program. We know that sometimes people don't admit they have a problem. And then it's the family. I like what you said previously, Andre, where the codependents, those that are living with the person, actually realizes there's a problem. And I know then there's something like intervention. Maybe we can just mention something on this, because I know many people are not aware of this.
Look, an intervention is something that families and groups of people can prepare. And it's basically a gentle confrontation with this is how each individual is experiencing that person's behavior or chemical use. You know, so it doesn't have to be, you know, attacking and breaking somebody down, but it is just a reflection on, please get help. This is how it's impacting your loved ones. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that way.
It's a time where the family and friends can let them see the reality, is to reflect their realities back to them. So that the person that is struggling can get to the point where they realize, but this is the reality in my life, and it is a problem.
And I know it's hard for people to do that. It's hard to get to this step. So what do you recommend? I think it helps if there's a professional person present as well, except for the family as well, to just lead guide them through the process, right?
Yes, I'm very much in favor of getting a professional, because they've developed the skills and you know, the ability to break down the denial mechanism. You know, so definitely a facilitator that's known or has got knowledge of interventions.
Another thing that I noticed, Andre, we were mentioning quite a bit of the addictions and the substances and chemicals, but I notice that cannabis was not mentioned amongst those. It's legalized. When and how does cannabis become a problem?
Look, today there's lots of science and expertise available that can separate the intoxicating, which is called THC, from the other chemicals. And there are a lot of chemicals, according to the scientists, that could be of benefit to people. And that's why the movement has been more towards the CBD sort of network, where actually it's not mood altering or intoxicating. And it has been thoroughly sort of tested and developed.
Yeah, that's very good that you differentiate between those two. But what about cannabis then, not the CBD?
Yes. So cannabis, we know, is or has addictive potential, and it happens exactly the same. That people need more over a period of time, and will become more and more desperate to get their fix.
Mm. We are talking about the person that says it's legalized now, I can grow my own cannabis and I can smoke it by myself. But that is the THC, isn't it? Mood altering, that can be addictive.
And do you find that also in your practice before, that you had come across these people that thought, this is fine, I can handle that, and then eventually... I know they used to say that it's often a gateway drug. I don't know if that's really true, but yeah, tell us about that.
I tend to agree with that, that very often it's one of the first things that young people use, and it often just becomes a phase for many people, but people with an addictive potential could reach a point where that's not enough anymore. So they move on to the next chemical or combination of chemicals.
Right. Andre, we need to almost end off with this program, but I don't want to end off without acknowledging how many people, especially young people, are using substances of some kind. I have a friend working at a school, and she told me about 80 to 90%, it's a private school, of those kids have experimented with some form of drugs. So what do you want to say to parents in this situation? I mean, it's really hard because, I mean, we always think our kids wouldn't do that. But so many of young people do it anyway. So what do you have to say to us about that?
What I would say is that experimentation, I think, is quite a normal teenage process. It's part of people's sort of development and, sort of joining activity with my peer group.
But unfortunately, some people get hooked. That's the problem, right?
Yes, that's the problem. And you can't, in early youth, identify who's going to be the person eventually addicted. So for me, it's about parents just being very open about the topic and being able to actually provide the necessary education without it being scammed or swept under the carpet.
Mm. Mm. To be open and honest.
Yes.
And not to say we don't do it, we are Christians. Because that's not going to help for the opening thing and to really be able to talk about it. But unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much, Andre. It's been very, very helpful. And next week, we're going to talk about process addiction. But for today, this is where we're going to leave it.
And please, listeners, send your questions or remarks to Frederick, Frederik, Suki, Soekie, at kpulpit.co.za. Until next week, and we're looking forward to continue our discussion with Andre. Thank you, and bye-bye.
This insert was brought to you by Radio K Pulpit, 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.